Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Hi, everyone. I'm super excited to be here today. Today on The Psychology of Work, I'm joined by Lauren Mingy, the founder and CEO of Quintessa Marketing, which is really a performance-driven marketing company that's redefining employee engagement and corporate responsibility. Under Lauren's leadership, Quintessa has grown to more than 200 employees, transformed turnover from 80% to 17%, and built a culture rooted in purpose, motivation, and giving back. Lauren has become known for her innovative approach in leadership, connecting the team's personal why to the company's mission, doing this on a regular basis, using performance-based incentives to drive engagement and showing that when you invest in people, performance follows. Lauren, I'm just so happy to have you here today. But before we dive into all things motivation and culture and people, can you start by just sharing a bit about yourself, like your background, what led you to start Quintessa, and what keeps you inspired as a leader?
Yeah. So thanks so much for having me. Just feel so blessed to be here. And just a little bit about myself. I'm married to love of my life, Leo, and we have 5 kids. So that's what's most important. But we also have 200 employees. So I tell everyone I have 205 children is what it feels like because they're, you know, family to us and making sure we take care of them. And really how Quintessa started was out of a problem solving. So I was working for a company doing admin work as an executive assistant, working with personal injury lawyers, doing TV commercials. I started the SEO division and really saw a need for intake and intake optimization. And what we discovered was their intake agents were being paid minimum wage to handle possible million-dollar cases. And it just didn't really make sense. And so the question was, if I could advertise for lawyers, I think I could advertise for myself and develop leads. And this is as I was a single mom going through a divorce. This is before I met Leo. And so I started the company because I was unhirable. I had been like the head of a company, but I didn't have a college degree. And in Oklahoma, the largest employer requires you to have a degree. So I actually got like banned from Craigslist from applying to too many jobs at one time. And so I didn't really have an option. I was like, I have to make money, I have my daughter, Ruby. And so I started out of that. And then obviously the why became much bigger. After hiring one employee, we continued to grow and that changed things. And I think for me, what inspires me to continue to lead and to do what we do and get up every day is because my why is so much greater than, you know, a nice car or a nice vacation. It's more of an eternal factor for us and more legacy driven. And so that's what's exciting. So the purpose is there for me and then for our family too.
Yeah, amazing. I just know how important family is to you. I feel like every time we've chatted, you and I have just been like, oh my God, I just feel like I have this image of you and your family on this like big, like property that has woods. I don't even know if this is the right image, but I just picture like you and your kids running around doing all the outdoor things. And I know like I've shared about my 3 kids too. But I love, just to get up and to really have to like build this company. And it sounds like you did it step by step, really. Mm-hmm. You know, you built this and then now you can offer space for other people to come in and to make like a living and to build towards a bigger purpose. And you've been able to kind of remember your own story. And then it seems like that's sort of a thread to how you still connect with the people who are like working with you and for you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've been a bartender, I've been a waitress. I know what it's like to not make rent. I know what it's like to get a 1 cent tip. And so I didn't come from money. My family was fine, but I had to work for everything that I have. And so, you know, the goal is we're going to give everyone an opportunity. Now what you do with that opportunity, if you squander it, that's on you, right? But if you seize it, that's on you too. So we try to think different in hiring and lead our people differently on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it sounds like you're really empowering people and holding accountability at the same time. Yeah. And so like, how do you do that? How, like, what does that look like for you in your organization? Mm-hmm. Like, what's the messaging? How do you do that?
So we have our values lined out and it spells PRAISE. So it's purpose, resilience, accountability, integrity, success-driven, and then excellence. And so we hire and fire based on values. So mm-hmm. one that we will never move on is integrity. So if there is ever an integrity, like, people are fired immediately. But we try to live and breathe by that on the values. And then what we do when someone first comes in, we tell them, like, hey, listen, if you're here for money, you're going to be gone, just because this is a tough job. You're hearing about people that have been injured in an accident. This is sales performance, right? So you're held accountable to metrics every day. And if you don't like that, then this is not the place for you. So we almost like try to intentionally push people out while interviewing so that they know, like, this is realistic. Like, we are telling them exactly what's expected. And then we also line out for each one of our employees 90-day expectations and every 90 days, meaning this is what 90 days looks like. Are you agreeing to this? Yes. Okay, great. Like, let's hold you accountable to that. So it's keeping it in front of them at all times. And then we just looked at little things that we could do to incentivize, right? Because for us, our biggest expense is not our salaries. It's not our employment. It's actually our cost of goods sold. It's our advertising. And so the question was, you know, we've already spent the money. How can we get more from it? And so we started adding incentives, like, hey, if you meet goals, we're going to bring in lunch for you the next day. And so we did individual metrics, and then we also did team metrics, and then we do team outings if they hit their goals as a team. So we're trying to incentivize both. I mean, we spend $50,000 a month on free food, but we brought in $1 million in revenue that very first month we did it. So it's like little tweaks, like, how can we help our employees? And then it also helped the bottom line in the company. And so I think we're constantly innovating and trying new things. And I think agility for companies is the most important thing to stay ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like, when I put this in lens of like sort of psychobabble, it's like you look at the behavioral, like the smaller things you can do, like bringing in lunch or like, but I know because you told me this in the past, you're really like listening to the people around what they wanted. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just a free lunch. It was also like, you know, what people are sort of asking for and wanting and really enjoying. Mm-hmm. And I know for you, purpose is a big driver. And, you know, when I look at organizations from a psychological lens or a systems lens, purpose is one of the hardest things to build in. Mm-hmm. And so you've like done this in industry that historically would have been like, well, you're working with a bunch of salespeople around kind of personal injury stuff, right? Like, how do you pull together purpose and that together, but you've done it. So like, yeah. What does that look like? And yeah, what does that look like for you?
You know, I mean, listen, I, as a little girl, I didn't grow up thinking I would help personal injury lawyers, right? Like, that's not like what you dream about. And that's not what anyone, I think, dreams about. But our goal is world domination of the personal injury market, right? And then it's also giving away half our profit. Like, that's the biggest thing. Now, the salesmen we bring in, a lot of them do not care about philanthropy, right? They're in it for me. And so it's like, how can I take someone, because you need high performers. How can mm-hmm. I take someone who's a high performer, who is a, you know, a racehorse, and get them tied to a purpose bigger than them? And so what we do in our interviews, we ask them, What would $5,000 a month change for you? What does that look like? Is it a house? Is it a car? Is it a, you know, your family's vacation? Is it retiring your parents? And then our managers help them back into what they need to do per day. And then they keep, you know, symbols up in front of them. So if it's like, you know, a new house, they have a picture of a house like hanging on in their cube. And so they're holding them to it, like, hey, I remember you got to sign 5 today to be able to hit your goal today. How's that going? What did you see? What did you do? And so it's really getting that and then tying it to the company why. And then same for the managers. So every single person we hire, we know, hey, what would this performance bonus do for you? And they share in that. So it's really all of our employees that get to profit share. And then from the profit, we're trying to make sure that they have a bigger why. Again, because, you know, we don't, like, this is life-changing money for you. If you make that much, especially in Oklahoma, right? Like, they're getting paid, call it, you know, $45,000 to $50,000 a year starting out. but they can make an extra $78,000. Some make an extra $100,000 a month for answering phones and helping people that have been in an accident, getting them with the right lawyer. So it's been a really interesting process seeing it all kind of build out over the last 5 years.
Wow. Yeah, just so powerful. It sounds like what I'm hearing too is you're really expert at operationalizing, like taking this big idea around purpose, you know, and then like tying the dollars to the purpose and then operationalizing for each unique individual, but then also communicating very, very regularly about where they are towards their own personal goal. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think a lot of people don't do that. Like they're like, okay, they don't even ask about someone's personal purpose or on their way, like just in general, right? Like that just doesn't happen as often as it should. Mm-hmm. But then also structuring the kind of intersecting the why of the company with their why, but then also that regular feedback is what keeps people accountable and driven and understanding the direction they're moving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, people don't want to be cattle. They want to be more than a number and they want to feel seen. And in a time that we heard a stat, like people under 35 will have had 10 different jobs. And so it's like, how can you keep employees, right? Like, what can you do? And because a lot of our employees, 90% of them are under 30. So it's mm-hmm. What can you do? How can you keep them motivated? How can you keep them engaged? How can you keep the turnover low? What can we do to change that? So it's been a very, again, interesting experience on the psychology side, on the motivation side, on the hiring side. Like adding in one more question completely changes the hiring process. So it's constantly tweaking what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the age piece is interesting, right? Because people have, not to make like total broad swaths, what's that phrase, brushes around like generational stuff,
right.
But different generations are, when you look at them like in aggregate, kind of driven by different things in some mm-hmm. ways. So, and I'm just thinking you're hiring salespeople, right? I was just meeting with this like super senior sales guy who's been around the block like for a long time, really focused on sales. He has a very similar approach to you, right? He's talking about how he's bringing in these sort of all-star salespeople that are like uber alpha, used to winning independently, want the competition, and then how do you bring them together in a way and create a culture that creates more of a we versus an I? And so anyway, I was chatting with him about it, but I feel like you're doing the same thing. And so how do you create, or actually do you do that? Because it sounds like your superpowers bringing the purpose into the individual and then really leaning into that. Do you feel like there's sort of a we thing with the employees or...
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So everyone's divided into teams. So the thing is, like, if you look at, like, we always talk about like the Chicago Bulls, right? Like you only need one Michael Jordan, right? Like that's normally the goal. Like you just need one. Well, in our company, we don't want one. We want hundreds, right? We want everyone to be able to do that. So the trick was, how can I keep someone motivated personally, even if their team is not hitting goal? How can I keep the team motivated even if one person's not meeting the goal? So what we did is we incentivized both. We said, hey, listen, like you're on a team and collectively the team hits this, you know, manager, you're getting to share in the bonus of that. Individually, team members, if you're hitting your goal every day, guess what? You're going to eat lunch. If you are hitting your goal every week as a team, the whole team, right? So it's like we have probably 10 different incentives individually and collectively, to where then it's like I'm not being demotivated if I have a bad player on my team, and because I still can, you know, feast in what I've created, right? And so it's the balance of how can I be able to do both as an individual contributor, but then I need to be able to tie my why to the bigger company. So it's constantly keeping that in front of them and rewarding both. And that to me was, we've created a pretty good balance on that side of things. And it also makes the individuals coach people up or coach them out real fast. So we're seeing like our own intake representatives take more pride in what they're doing because they're like, hey, you're bringing down the team and I don't think this is the right fit for you. Right. Or they'll mm-hmm. even tell like our VP, like this new person's not going to meet it. Like they're not going to. And so it's been great because they're worried about the team and individually at that point too. So it's, you know, simple, try to motivate both, try to encourage both.
Yeah, I love it. So it's like a double win. If the team wins and the individual wins, mm-hmm. but you know, demotivated if the team's not well doing well, but it still incentivizes people to, I imagine, like kind of coach each other, help each other, get the team there. And then also, it sounds like sort of the people who are bringing people on this, the hiring team, is taking accountability and responsibility to trying to get the match right between who they're bringing in and also the larger culture, which like we see in a lot of organizations we work with, like when that's loose or not well articulated, it just creates all this havoc, right? It like disrupts culture. It creates a high level of churn. You know, there's an inconsistency. It's just really not great for a whole bunch of different reasons. So having these gatekeepers that really, so I feel like you have this culture that's really well established, you know, where, you know, that's it's spoken about. You're very clear on your values. They're filtered through the hiring process. They're communicated internally. And then you're looking at, you know, you give people sort of a livable wage in terms of like their baseline, but then you have lots of incentives to help them kind of grow and make this really like life-changing income for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then have people across the organization like understand what you're doing. So there's this shared sense of like the culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been fun for sure. You know, you get motivated, try different.
Yeah. Like how did you figure all this out basically?
You know, we tell everyone, we can tell you a million ways how not to run this company, right? I mean, I'm a very competitive person. I'm naturally a salesperson. And so for me, I laugh, but I tell my husband I'm the world's greatest problem solver because I get real ticked off when we're not meeting goals. And so I come in like a bull in a china shop and I'm like, listen, like I need to understand why we're not meeting goals. And so I ask a lot of questions. So I think that's where we've been successful is we will turn on a dime. If something doesn't work, I'll change it in 24 hours. And so I think that's the great thing about us, but also sometimes that's the worst thing about us is because sometimes they can create this like rubber band effect, right? Like where you're, you know, ricocheting, you're going back and forth. So that's one thing we talk about in our interview is like flexibility of like, listen, you have to be willing to adapt because if it worked yesterday, it may not work today. So I think that's really it. So it comes back to the agility. Asking lots of questions, being inquisitive, having our leaders being inquisitive, and also having an open door to where people can come to me if there's a problem. And if they're saying something doesn't work, I'm like, great, let's change it. You know, you cannot be stuck on like, well, this is how we've always done it, right? Like, it's just, It can't always stay that way. And so I think that's really how we've moved and shake the industry a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's not a small organization. You're around 200 or so, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking like you're still operating almost like a smaller organization with that flexibility. But we also know like around it's like 150 and change, like things start to shift, right? And but you're still able to, it seems like, to keep this flexibility. Is there anything that had to change when you kind of crossed over that threshold or like, you know what I mean? I'm just wondering if you feel pressure in a different way, just given your size.
Yeah. I mean, I think you become, when I first started the company, it was just me and my daughter, right? So I was totally risky because I'm like, I can figure this out. I know. Well, now, you know, we're a little more risk adverse. And so I've actually pushed back more into the risk side because I'm like, listen, like your gut is your gut, right? Like, and if you know you're supposed to be doing something, you need to trust it. And so I think that's been the biggest thing that I've had to go back into because sometimes when you bring in leaders, naturally they want to do things their way. And there's some things that are DNA level at Quintessa Marketing that we can't change, right? Like it's the chocolate chip cookie recipe. Like this is what we're known for. If you want to add sprinkles on top, if you want to add whipped cream, sure. But like the foundation, you can't take out the sugar. Right? Then it's going to taste like crap. And so we've told everyone like, hey, listen, like there are core ingredients we have to keep. And then as we've been growing the leadership team, you know, you add in silos and that's whenever it creates inefficiencies. So what we've actually started doing is like in our SOPs, we put timeline on it. So it's like, this should take no more than X time. So we put the expectation so then they can't drag it out. And I'm like, why did it take a week for us to fix this problem? This is 20 minutes. And so we started putting them on our SOPs, the actual time that's allotted for it, just as like a framework. Like this is when you get really good at this SOP, it should take you no more than 30 minutes. And it's created more urgency. And that's the one thing that you cannot lose as a company. Because when you lose your sense of urgency, it's like steering the Titanic. You can't do it, right? And you're going to hit that iceberg. And so I think that's one other thing that we've really done well at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one thing that's just jumping out to me is like, you are clear, right? There's this idea that, like kind is clear and that you can like speak directly to kind of what the expectation is and then put parameters around it. So there's no guessing here. Mm-hmm. But also what you said earlier was when like something's not working, you kind of go to the person and you ask questions, you know, and there's like an urgency there, but you also kind of open up with like, you're curious. It sounds like almost collaborative. Like, what's going on here? What do you need? Like, let's just name it and figure it out versus like almost like a shaming, just like fix it, right? Go fix it. Like, it's like, well, help me understand, which is a different way to solve problems than like you're failing here.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know? I mean, how can you fix a problem if you don't understand it? Right. And also like your perspective of an issue and my perspective of an issue are two completely different things. So like we have to identify what the true problem is first. Right. So we have EOS and traction where we've gotten really good at actually, you know, you spend 20 minutes defining the problem before you solve it. Right.
Yeah.
And so that's really what we've gotten to. And like you're saying, it's this general problem. That's, I need specifics. Right. Don't tell me high level an issue. And I tell our attorneys the same thing, too. I'm like, if you speak in generalities, I don't even know if that's a word, but if you speak in generalities, like, I can't solve it. Yeah. Like, give me specific examples. Tell me the exact problem and I will solve it. Right. Like, give me the exact issue. And so that's what we've tried to get really good with in our employees, and also makes them communicate, which I think, you know, a lot of people, especially younger, they've lost the art of communication. It's easier for them to just walk out of a job. Right. And leave a bad review. I mean, I'll call people and ask, give me the specific problem, like let us help solve it, right? And it's, again, different way of handling things, but I think it allows you to continue to grow and scale.
Yeah, no, totally. And I, like when I think about like the role of psychology, it's like what you're doing, you just seem so natural at it, right? You're like looking for the problem, you're moving towards it, you're doing it in a way that's like quite, you're like very clear about expectations, but you're also like, I want you to win here. This relationship matters. Like I can help you get there. When something's not going right, let's just talk about it in a direct way and then find a solution. And in psychology, people always just think of it's like touchy-feely kind of emotional stuff. And like, but that's part of it. That's part of human dynamics. But it's really about just getting to the root of the issue and like talking about hard things so you can solve problems.
Right.
You know, and in sort of dynamic world, people don't want to do that because they don't have the skills to do it or it just feels weird at work or something. But when you can actually just name things directly, you operate a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like you do that just kind of like naturally. So like, as you're speaking, I'm just like labeling all the things from like an org psych kind of lens, but you've just like done it, you know? And I love Traction too. I think I've read it like 3 times and we use Traction a little bit of groups, but you're making me think I need to pull this in more, especially as we're growing.
It's been a change. I mean, it's really redefined our organization. Really is redefined it because everyone's speaking the same language.
Yeah. Wait, this is a question that's like more just like, I'm curious as like a fellow sort of CEO person is, did everyone read Traction or did you just read Traction and then implement it?
So all of our leadership. So the biggest thing is that the people casting the vision have to be speaking the same language, right? And then you take it a layer down. So it starts with your C-suite and then it goes to your VPs and then to your directors. So it's a long process, especially the bigger you get. But what we've seen is just implementing at the C-suite level and the VP level, like those are the people that are directly communicating with everyone. So if they are speaking in 90-day terms, holding them accountable to 90-day terms, because that's all they can really do, then it makes sense. And they're all rowing in the right direction. And then everyone knows, like if I ask any employee, hey, what's the core focus of Quintessa? They're like, oh, world domination of personal injury. Like everyone knows it, right? Like they understand, like that is when we will have been successful is when we have done that. And they don't read Traction. Like our intake agents haven't, right? But they're being like Tractionized in their own, you know, in their own way.
Just living it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They just don't really know it.
You know, I know we have to get ready to end in a minute, but one thing I want to highlight is that you sort of made a commitment to give away a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
So I'll let you talk about that. But how do you do that? What's the impact of that? What are you actually doing here? Mm-hmm. And can you just share more about that approach?
Yeah. So, I mean, just high level, like right before COVID hit, the month before, actually, we were listening to a sermon at Life Church in Edmond, and the thought of irrational generosity came up. And my husband and I had always been spontaneously generous, but not like pointed, meaning planned. And so I leaned over to my husband and said, hey, I really feel like we should give away half of our revenue. Again, I'm the visionary, not the math person. And so our husband, my husband was like, hey, listen. Yeah, he goes, listen, you don't make 50% profit. Like, you would be out of business in a couple, but he's like, you can give away 50% of your actual profit. And we're like, all right, that's what we're going to do. And so started that next month. And that's when COVID hit. We were actually getting fired from attorneys because they were in LA and New York. And so they couldn't, you know, they weren't open. So we did that. We wrote the check. We were faithful. And then we got like our largest order to date. And it was a $500,000 order, like a couple days later. And at that point, you know, everyone says you can't outgive God. And I'm like, well, we're going to try. Like, we're going to see how much we can do because we want to see what it's like to give away money while we're alive and see the ripple effects. Like, I want to hear the stories while I'm alive and not after I die, right? I want to know that we made an impact on this world right now. So to date, we've given over $10 million to different things since COVID. And really, it's in our DNA and it's in our employees' DNA too. So like, we will give people PTO to be able to go and volunteer at the charities that we, you know, help sponsor and things like that. And really for us, it's become more of our purpose and our why. And so you're doing stuff for the greater good. And so it's even at our, you know, in our kids, it's in the DNA level of them. So like, they know no matter what, every time we go out, because I was a waitress and a bartender, I know what it's like to get a 1 cent tip. We give them $100 no matter what. And so they even know that, like if they fill out the card receipt, they know it's $100, like you put it on there every time. And so our goal is to just be irrationally generous in everything we do with our time, with our resources, with our finances, like that's what we're doing. And it's been interesting because we've made more giving away half than we ever would have keeping it, because it's like, we're not Scrooge McDuck, right? Like, everyone knows, like, we're giving it away. We're not swimming in gold. We've done obviously very well, but even our employees are like, they're a part of it and they're seeing how much money we've given to really great causes. And our goal is to continue to keep doing that in Oklahoma and throughout the United States.
Yeah, it's just so inspiring. And just like, first off, thanks for making the world a better place and doing this. And I imagine from an alignment perspective, it's a way to pull the purpose in that people feel, know that if they help the company do better, they're making the world a better place, like very directly, you can see the impact. And then also that they're spending their time, not just the cash, showing up to do the work, which can just feel really good. Like just talking to you, I have the chills, you know, and I like, and I'm just thinking about that idea of like irrational generosity. It's a mindset.
It is. Right.
And there's like a generosity of spirit, I think, that I imagine that you exude that goes beyond just the dollars, you know, mm-hmm. and that's probably felt in your organization. And then people are willing to work hard because mm-hmm. they want to be a part of that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's for sure. It's been great.
Well, anything, you know, just thanks for sharing and sharing that and doing that is really incredible. But anything I like didn't ask you about that you wanted to share or anything?
You know, one thing that we do have right now is the Give 50 pledge. So we've actually told people in different businesses, because people will say like, that sounds great, but where do you start? And so the Give 50 pledge is, we have challenged companies kind of redefine what corporate responsibility looks like. So whether it's, you know, giving away 50% of your profits for a day, an hour, a week, a month, a year, and do that. And then also, if you take the pledge, like you get an hour with us, meaning if you have questions on your company, if you have things that you need help with, and I never had mentorship growing up, right? And again, like we fail and then we recover, but some people don't know how to recover or they don't know what they don't know. And so our goal is to redefine, right, what that looks like corporate responsibility wise and to help more businesses do it. So we've had several hundred companies take the pledge like to date, which we love. And so, yeah, I mean, give50.org is what it is. And we would, you know, love to be able to have more people take it and be able to reach out to us on social or on LinkedIn, because we always love talking with people and helping entrepreneurs do better and be better.
Oh my gosh, I want to do this. This is incredible. So it sounds like you're not just kind of matching the gift with what a lot of organizations do. You're giving your time back with a, you know, kind of expertise that you have, and then kind of donating the time that the cash goes to use too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can't wait to, when this goes out, I'll absolutely put that in the LinkedIn post as we put this out into the world.
Love it.
Well, Lauren, you're awesome. You're incredible. You're doing such great work. I just appreciate your generosity with me and sharing all of this. And I'm just so happy to bring, kind of highlight your story. So just keep up the awesome work. You know where to find me if you ever need anything. And I look forward to, you know, seeing you again soon.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
So fun.